If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
This is Wheel Bearings. I'm Dan Roth from Forbes.
I'm Sam Abu Al-Samad from Navigant Research.
And I'm Rebecca Linland from Rebecca Drives.
Rebecca, I've seen some content from some of our other friends. I think Nicole Wakeland posted her first thing on Rebecca Drives.
Yes. So I had a couple of friends. Nicole Wakeland posted on the Kia Seltos. And then Abby Bassett posted on the Toyota Highlander. They were two trips that I did not go on, and I really wanted the content for Rebecca Drives. So I had them. It's not an all-girls website, just to clarify, because Sam has posted as well. So it just so happened that two of my friends were available. But yeah, they did a great job, and it's been a lot of fun. And I continue to enjoy writing in 200 words or less.
Yeah. So if you want to read that stuff, go to RebeccaDrives.com, right? Like that's yes. That's where it should be. And they were posting because you were busy.
I was busy with the Corvette.
Can you talk about it?
Yes.
Okay. We'll get to that. Right. We'll get to that. But let's talk about other stuff first. Because Sam, I'm actually, correct me if I'm wrong. I think I'm wrong, actually. But you were driving the 2020.
There's a good chance of that.
Yeah, usually I am. My Twitter beating this morning certainly told me I was wrong. So you were
Twitter's never wrong, right?
The 2020 Nissan Armada. Is that like the old one, right? Like that's not a new thing. Yeah.
No, I mean it's been around badged as an Armada for 3 years now. They previously had the old generation Armada, which was based off the first generation Titan pickup truck. And then that got discontinued a couple, 2017. They replaced it with this new Armada, which is actually a rebadged version of the Nissan Patrol, which is what they sell it as globally. And apparently it's quite popular, especially in the Middle East and Africa. And they brought it to the U.S. to replace the old Armada rather than doing a new SUV off the new generation Titan platform. And in fact, there's also another version of this that's also sold here as the Nissan QX80, which arrived in its current form a couple of years before the Armada did. So the Armada is, the slightly more affordable alternative to the QX80.
Right. And the QX80 looks like it's so funny that they've got like the QX80 looking the way it does because it looks like a giant whale like Moby Dick. And then the Armada is, that's a name for a fleet of armed ships. And it's kind of like Moby Dick won the day. So,
yeah. yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, the Armada, is a big three row, full size body on frame SUV. Roughly the same size as a Chevy Tahoe or Ford Expedition. A Toyota Sequoia. And, there's basically four vehicles in this segment or four platforms in this segment in the U.S. market right now. You've got the GM utilities, the Chevy Tahoe and the long wheelbase Suburban, the GMC Yukon and the Cadillac Escalade. And then from Ford, you have the Expedition and Navigator. Toyota still has the Sequoia. And then Nissan has the Armada and the QX80. And surprisingly, the Armada has actually got a decent amount of market share. And back in December, when I went to the backgrounder for the new Tahoe, when they were showing us that at the Milford Proving Grounds, they put up a pie chart showing the market shares for the big three-row body-on-frame SUV segment. And they actually had, the Nissan at about had Nissan at about 9% of the market, which surprised me that they had that much. But, I pulled up the sales figures for 2019, and Nissan sold 32,000 Armadas last year in the U.S., which was quite a bit more than I anticipated.
That's
a lot
good.
More than It's a lot more than they sell at Titans. The Navigator sold just shy of 19,000 last year. The Expedition, which would be the more direct competitor, this sold 86,000. And the Sequoia was about just over 10,000 units last year. But GM really dominates this segment. They, you know, between the Chevy, the GMC, and the Cadillacs, they sold 263,000 in the U.S. alone last year. So, you know, they're still the big guns in this segment.
We like our big trucks, huh?
Oh yeah, we certainly do, especially if they come from GM. The Armada is a big, heavy SUV. And, you know, because it's based on the Patrol, you know, it benefits from a lot of features that the Patrol has, you know, because the Patrol, like the, you know, Toyota Land Cruisers and, you know, some of the other higher end SUVs, big SUVs that are out there, they really are designed with some pretty substantial off-road capabilities in there. You know, so this is not just a crossover. This thing's got all the kinds of things that you expect on something that can go run in the desert or anywhere where there isn't actually pavement. You know, so you've got things like a dual range transfer case. So you've got four-wheel drive low capability, locking rear differential, different driving modes so you can switch back and forth to, it manipulates the things like the stability control slip thresholds. You know, so that you can put it into snow mode and get better traction in snow or loose dirt or sand, things like that. So it's actually a pretty capable SUV. And when I went on the drive a couple of years ago in California, when they first launched this Armada here, we drove it out in Carmel and we drove it on an actual off-road course. And, you know, it's got four-wheel independent suspension, like the other vehicles in this segment. And it was pretty capable. And you get, you know, it's one of those things like with a Jeep, you know, you get it up on two opposite wheels there and it just keeps right on going, you know, two wheels in the air, two wheels on mounds. And it just keeps on going. That said, you know, it's okay on road. You know, it's reasonably comfortable, but you know, when you compare it, especially to something like the new Tahoe Suburban and the Yukon and Expedition, body control is not as smooth as what you would expect from those. You know, it does drive pretty heavy. It's, you know, you feel all 5,500 pounds of this thing. You know, it's nearly 3 tons. And at the price point that this one at, this was a Platinum Reserve, you know, so it had, you know, all the options in there. And it came to over $71,000.
Oh, that's right in the heart of the market. Wow.
Yeah. You know, it's at 71 grand, you know, it doesn't feel as luxury as you might expect it to at that price point, especially if you compare it to a Navigator, for example. Now, you know, a Lincoln Navigator, you know, or an Escalade is probably not going to have the kind of off-road capability that this has.
But nobody's going to use it. Like, or
that's very that's few. Probably yeah. True, at least especially in North America. You know, there's going to be a lot fewer people that are going to use it here than they might in some other markets. You know, and for those that really want off-road capability, you know, there's a lot of other options that are probably a little more expensive, but also, you know, have a more luxury feel to them. My wife and I went out to dinner and she looked at the wood, you know, there's real wood trim on the dashboard. And she said, you know, it looked like plastic and it kind of does, it doesn't look really premium. You know, the seats are kind of flat. They don't offer a whole lot of support. You know, it's roomy, you know, it's a big truck, so it should be roomy. It's also really thirsty. This thing averaged about 11 and a half miles per gallon.
From what I hear, that's about what like the Cadillac XT5 gets.
I've never done that bad in an XT5.
But Sam, you're right, though. The Patrol is, first of all, they're everywhere in the Middle East, and we see it often. It is quite capable in the sand, which, of course, is desirable. And it is that traditional truck base that is, you know, almost required for driving in other parts of the world, and it's done frequently. So I think it's a great vehicle from that standpoint, even though it is pretty old, but it's still a fun vehicle to drive around in the sand. That's all I'm going to say. Not that I ever drove in Saudi Arabia.
Right. That's true.
Never happened.
And I think that's the thing. Like, that's the thing to remember is that, you know, 30,000 units here in the U.S. is kind of just like icing on the cake for them when they're making their money with their Patrol elsewhere. And it allows them to have something in that market space. It's funny though that it makes some sense where the Nissan ends, right? This is your Platinum Reserve. It sounds like some kind of whiskey, but your Platinum Reserve was 71. That crosses over. The QX80 starts at like 66, 67. So,
and that's, you know, that's fairly typical when you look at, you know, where there's, you know, a mainstream brand and a luxury brand, you know, within the same automaker, you know, like, you know, for Ford or Lincoln. I mean, at the, you know, there's usually a bit of overlap there. You know, it's not a clean break, you know, because, you know, the reality is that most people aren't going to buy the absolute base version of the premium one anyway. You know, so they usually end up spending more than that. So it's not that surprising there'd be some overlap.
Because I think if you really want the nice interior, the QX80 has always impressed me.
Yeah.
At least the way they put it into press fleets, which is so nice. I just love the cabin of that thing. I have always loved the QX80 cabin. And it is. It's like you said, it's very thirsty. It's got that. And it's another one with a big V8 that makes good noises and just doesn't make a lot of power.
But it's got adequate power. Yeah, it's 400 horsepower.
Yeah. And that base, you know, the Armada starts at 47.1. So there is overlap at the top end, but you're not really getting the same capabilities if you spend $70,000 or $65,000 on the Armada versus, you know, the same amount on the Infiniti version.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure, like, the difference is you get the Armada with everything versus the Infiniti with, like, some. Yeah.
No, exactly.
Moving on from very expensive Nissans to cheaper Nissans, you Sam, were in the Versa as well.
Yeah, so the new Nissan Versa launched last summer, and Rebecca and I were both on the launch drive down in Nashville.
Nash Vegas.
Yes,
and it's much better than the old Versa, right? Which was like awful.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is actually quite a nice car. You know, for an entry level car, this is one of the cheapest cars you can get as a new car in the U.S. right now. Aside from, I think the only one that's cheaper is the Mitsubishi Mirage. And you definitely want this more than you want the Mirage. No question about that. In fact, starting price, you know, including delivery for the new Versa for the base S model with a 5-speed manual is $15,650 with delivery. The one I had was the SR, which was loaded, came to just over $21,000. And that, you know, it had everything on there. And, you know, for $21,000, you're getting, you know, a decently sized compact sedan with a full suite of driver assist options as features. So you've got lane keeping assist, forward collision warning, radar based adaptive cruise control, blind spot monitoring. You know, you've got everything on here, and you know it's a nice looking car. It's got decent driving dynamics. You know, it's not enormously powerful. I think it's like about 130 horsepower from the 1.6 liter four cylinder CVT. But it's more than adequate for, you know, as a daily commuter. You know, it's certainly not going to run with a Corvette or anything like that. But you know, it's fine. It's all most people need. And you know, in the you know, when you look at the way prices are going, you know, it's actually really hard to afford a new car. You know, and I think, you know, Rebecca, you can confirm this. You know, I think it's about the ratio of used car sales every year to new car sales is about 3.5 to 1, I think.
Yeah. It's like 2. Yeah. I can't remember that, but it's a huge, used car is a huge number.
Right. But, you know, for somebody that's looking to maybe buy their first car, buy basic transportation, they want something new with a warranty. This is a really good choice. You know, it's roomy enough for four adults. It's got a decent sized trunk. Personally, I'd rather have a hatchback, but you know, it is what it is. You know, it's the American market.
Do you think it's a mistake to not offer it in a hatchback?
Probably not. You know, I don't think the Versa Note, which was the hatchback version of the previous generation, I don't think that ever sold really well. Like I said, my preference would be a hatchback, but I think, and at the Chicago Auto Show, Honda was talking about at their press conference, they talked about the Civic hatchback they were surprised at how well it's selling. It's actually about 20% of Civic sales. You know, for the at the Versa size class, you know, considering that customers are moving away from smaller cars, I think they probably decided that offering a hatchback version of this one probably wasn't worth it for the volumes that they would have.
Yeah, but and that Civic hatch is so cool looking. It's really badass. Like they've set it up where it's so sporty looking.
Right. I totally agree. So I think, you know, the only real complaint that I have about this, about the Versa, is I just wish Nissan would find a better supplier for their in-vehicle screens for the displays. On pretty much everything they build on the Nissan brand, they have what I would say are probably among the worst center screen displays of anybody in the industry. They're low contrast, they're dim, they have a lot of glare from the sun. They're hard to see even when you're not wearing sunglasses. And if you put on polarized sunglasses, they become almost invisible. They're just terrible screens.
I've got an idea.
Please.
I've got an idea. Keep the screens out of the cars.
Well, there's a concept.
unfortunately, none of that crazy talk.
It's not going to happen.
Unfortunately, that's not a realistic proposition these days. I know. So, you know, look at Hyundai, Kia, you know. They have cars in the same price segment, you know, the Kia Rio, Hyundai Accent, and they have found a supplier of displays. They have some of the best displays. You know, they're high contrast. There's no glare. They're matte screens. They look really good. Nissan.
One of the things I will say about the screens in Hyundai Kia cars is I can't get them dim enough. On a like regularly, I just expect that now when I'm in a Hyundai or a Kia or a Genesis, I can't get the screen dark enough at night for me.
And so you mean like a blackout mode kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's not like, that's such a kind of like a picky detail.
But it's not an insignificant detail.
Yeah. Cause it actually can bring up eye strain and that glary at night that can get tiring after a while.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's, you know, that's why we're going to start to see in the next few years a shift probably towards more OLED screens like what we have on the new Escalade we talked about recently.
Well, they're just very expensive at this point. So
right, they are. But they're coming down in price. But, you know, at least among LCD screens, you know, the ones that Hyundai and Kia use are so much better. They're at least usable. You know, the Nissan screens are just terrible. Please, Nissan, fix that. The rest of the car, you know, is fine. I didn't have any real complaints about it, you know, and keeping in mind, you know, that this is basic entry level transportation. You know, it's not quite as sporty feeling as, you know, say a Honda Fit. But, you know, if you want basic transportation, it's good. It's really good. And I think it's highly, you know, I would highly recommend this, you know, and, you know, the one I had, you know, was the SR, which is the top end model. You know, it starts at 18,240. You know, the test car I had, you know, had a couple of option packages on there, the electronics package with a map pocket light and illuminated kick plates, you know, stuff you don't really need. And the lighting package, you know, the exterior ground lighting, you know, $700 for that. Skip those. Just add the convenience package that gets you the heated front seats and the intelligent cruise control, and you're good. 18.5, 19.5 with delivery, you're all set. You know, under 20 grand, you know, and you've got a really good car. Got 35 miles per gallon, you know, and it's decently fun to drive.
Well, a penalty box fun to drive, because this is the penalty box class. Like,
no, I mean, you know, you're not going to get, you know, all soft touch surfaces in there. You know, it's mostly hard plastics, but it, you know, it looks fine. You know, they did a nice job on the texturing. You know, there's no, when you look around or you feel the edges, there's no sharp flashing. You know, everything's nicely trimmed off. You know, so it's definitely not a penalty box. It's comfortable to drive. You know, it's adequate performance. So no, I would not say it's a penalty box.
Okay. All right. I mean, and it's, what does it have? The, you went over the powertrain, right? It's got the CVT is the transmission. The Nissan does a pretty good CVT. So
yeah, no, it's a good CVT, the 1.6 liter four cylinder, naturally aspirated. You know, it's the same powertrain that's in the Kicks. You know, so it's a decent powertrain. You know, it's, to get the, keep the price down. You know, it's got things like a twist beam rear axle instead of an independent rear suspension, but it still had, good ride quality, even on Michigan roads. So yeah, nothing that I would complain about, especially in the context of what this is supposed to be. It's definitely, if somebody's looking for a new car, with a new car warranty, basic transportation, if you don't want a crossover, then I think that this is one of, this is a really good option.
So your choices are basically like Versa or Kicks. They're kind of the same sort of hardware, right? Underneath. And
They're both on the same platform. So, either one of them is fine, and if you want something a little taller, basically if you want something taller that, is more, that has a tailgate, is kind of hatchback like, go for the Kicks. If you want a sedan, go for the Versa. And the Versa is a little bit cheaper. Did you want to talk about the QX50?
It's kind of anonymous, and I wish that really neat 2-liter engine was a little bit more refined. This is not the crossover to drop $50,000 on. It's nice. It's not super duper expensive, but there's better choices in the class. I had some issues with the new Infiniti InTouch. I don't really like it as much as the Hyundai Kia systems tend to just wind up being the benchmark. It's not, I put it in eco mode and I was shocked at how like borderline dangerous it is. It's really, really numb to the accelerator. So you got to like floor it and that kind of erases any point of putting it in eco. Overall I was not blown away by it. And there's materials issues in it that I don't think it was a lot more Nissan than Infiniti. Which surprised me, but it's the right size. It's not priced poorly. It looks good. Doesn't really distinguish itself in any other way.
Okay. Let's get your take on the Corvette then.
So I will be the first one to say I have not spent a lot of time in previous versions of the Corvette. So I am not probably the best person to compare one to the other. By the same token, I do like the fact that my first real time in a Corvette was in the mid-engine, because I feel like I'm starting out with really one of the best cars on the road today. And, we often talk about price point on this show, and this price point at $59,995 is insanely good. Like it's crazy what they have done for that price. So I was in Las Vegas earlier this week. The way that they set up the program was the first afternoon we actually had it on road. There's beautiful roads outside of Vegas, the Valley of Fire. We drove through national parks and it's just gorgeous. And we were blessed with an incredibly gorgeous day as well. So this car, I was in the LT5, one with the high speed, the track performance package in
it's like Z51.
Z51 suspension. Thank you. Right. But what I loved, what is so cool about it, is there's this thing called the Z mode for Zorro, and it basically allows you to pick and choose every aspect of your experience. So I tend to like a heavy, tight wheel, but you don't necessarily want that suspension on the road. So I was able to pick a track steering feel with a more touring road feel, but I wanted my brakes to be really crisp and fairly aggressive. So I did sport for my brakes, and you can just pick. It's really, really cool. And it provides such a personalization in this vehicle. I was driving with the delightful Henry Payne, who writes for the Detroit News, and he's actually a very accomplished race car driver. So it was fun because we were able to talk about how he would set up the car. And there was a lot of similarities. We both liked that heavier steering feel, but just the ability to be able to pick and choose was really, really cool. I drove it for about an hour and a half and it was just nonstop comfort. The other thing that I do mention quite a bit and go back and forth on whether I should is the height. I'm short. And so trying to get comfortable in a lot of cars can be difficult. But the visibility, because there's no engine in the front anymore, the visibility is fantastic out the front. In the back, at that base model or entry level, I prefer to call it, because there's really nothing base about this vehicle. At that $60,000 price mark, you are not getting the rear camera view on the mirror rear camera view, which is a $1,500 option. And I will tell people that that is an absolute necessity because out the back, it's very, very narrow. You know, the engine is back there now. You've got really thick, I guess there's C-pillars back there. And, you know, and visibility is definitely compromised out the back. But out the front, it's fantastic. So,
that, you know, that's fairly standard for a mid-engine
car. It is, very much so. And I think we're also fortunate that we have that technology now with that camera view to be able to help with that rear visibility.
It was interesting to read some of the early impressions too, because the front visibility was, you know, compared to, I guess, some of the other cars, it's not quite as good as like a McLaren or an NSX. And I'm just like,
well, all right. I don't know. I mean, I haven't driven a McLaren. I have spent time in the NSX. I found this car to be, I mean, the A-pillars are incredibly narrow. I don't know who's having trouble with visibility, because I felt like it was a wide open landscape.
I think that it's less the visibility overall, which is definitely an improvement. It's more of the fact that, like, you can see the road closer to the edge of the hood in some of the others.
Okay. Which,
some of that is seating position, sort of where the seat height is set. But also, yeah, I mean, that's like a variable of the car.
Yeah, I mean, I found it to be outstanding. Yeah, the other cool, I mean, I don't know. I felt the visibility was really, really good. The other thing that's neat is the steering wheel, which there's been some controversy about the steering wheel.
Well, because it's square.
But you know, it allows for easy movement on the track, because then the next day we had it on the track. And so, you know, again, it never got in the way. And there's plenty of room. There's a lot of travel back and forth in the steering wheel, so you can push it. You know, I like to push it all the way back into the dash. And again, some, you know, other people with, if you're taller, you need to pull it out more, but it's all electronic, so it's easy to make those minute adjustments. But the top of the steering wheel, when it's in the square position, you can actually, it perfectly frames the dashboard and, you know, the information center that's right in the middle, right in front of you. And it fits it perfectly. And which is those kinds of attention to detail is pretty cool, I think. I had a very souped up version. It was $85,000. But we looked at the $60,000 one, which they had there as well. There was a $70,000 and a $75,000 one. So you can,
Even at 85, you know, that's half the price, half the starting price of an NSX. Exactly.
Right. And like that's always been sort of the Corvette thing is like, yes, but for the price. But I feel like there doesn't really need to be that sort of disclaimer as much anymore. Like it's amazing what they have, where they have priced it. But it's not like you miss out on anything. It's comprehensively engineered. It's well made. It's you know, maybe it's down a little bit on power compared to some of the other cars that cost quite a bit more.
And it's almost 500 horsepower.
I know. My gosh.
Which is up.
And the DCT, the dual clutch transmission, they base it off of Porsche's PDK, which is a really, really good benchmark. And because the PDK is now, I actually drove the original PDK when it first came out years ago on the 911, and it was okay. But then we got to drive it again, and it was that much better. And you know, now of course it's really, I mean, it is the benchmark. And the DCT that this Corvette has, it really is. It's faster than a human. It's faster than anything that you could shift. And you know, Henry played around a little bit with the paddle shifters. I just, you know, and the pro driver, when we did hot laps, he played around with it, but not that many people really did, because you just don't need to. You're not going to be better than what they've set, how they've set it up.
I'm curious, you know, about, you know, one of the other controversies with this thing, you know, was that whole center console and that crazy strip of buttons that, you know, that sweeps up from the center console. What did you think about that?
So this is what I wrote in my review is it's festooned with an array of control buttons and bifurcates the passengers in nearly puritanical fashion. And unfortunately, because I'm limited to 200 words, I did have to take out the text about any hanky-panky is going to be limited to only the most acrobatic of people.
You've got to leave room for the Holy Spirit.
Exactly. But, you know, it wasn't as noticeable once you're in the cabin. It definitely divides. I mean, it is a cockpit for one, for sure. The passenger is almost like a sidecar. But you kind of get used to it a little bit, I guess. It's, you know, the buttons are actually, so the top portion of the buttons are the driver controls, the HVAC, the heated seats, things like that, some comfort ones. And then the bottom part is for the passenger. And that actually works out pretty well because it is at like arm's length. It's at hand level for both the passenger and then the driver. If they've got their hands at 9 and 3, then it's at a nice level for them to play with the buttons. The screen is the center dash screen is very much oriented towards the driver. And the only wrinkle we ran into was with the radio. The radio button is at the top left-hand corner. And that means that it's really only accessible to the driver. Henry is very tall and he was able to reach over to turn it off or to adjust the volume. But it was a significant stretch. And like for me, I looked and I'm like, that thing's just too far away for me.
Yeah, I mean, Henry's about 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it was not, I think if they had, and I actually told them, I made the suggestion, I would look at moving that button to even the right corner, upper corner, or right lower corner. I think they would be better off. I mean, it's sort of like right now it's all the way up in, if you think about the US, it's all the way up in Seattle, and I'd rather see it down in Florida. So, you know, I think it's just from a positioning standpoint. But what they told me, and this really kind of surprised me, was that most Corvette drivers drive by themselves. Which I was kind of surprised about.
I mean, have you spoken to most Corvette drivers?
I'm sorry. Be careful. You're getting into my dating pool right now.
Like, if you, in your diary, it's like drove Corvette insufferable for pages and pages.
I think that's probably not uncommon for sports cars.
Right. Know? I was going to say, I bet it's probably the same as Miata drivers in that sense where it's a two-seater. And so most people kind of drive only themselves other than family drivers, right? I don't know.
Yeah,
that's true.
I know. I was a little surprised. So that's one of the reasons. I'm not going to say that I love that center console because I don't. I think it's very, there's two kind of awkwardly placed cup holders but it's not so much they're awkwardly placed. It's more that they're awkward to use. There's very little cabin space. There is a slot for your phone, which is kind of cool because while it's behind you for safety reasons, it's in a good spot. It's like a rubberized, container. I should have taken a picture of it. I'll try and find one online. And that's where your phone goes, which is kind of cool. And then there's a small center console, like little cabin, little storage bin. But then again, it is quite small. So, you know, the storage in the cabin is pretty minimal. There's little, I don't know if they still call them map bins because we don't have maps anymore. But
yes,
you know,
we do.
On each door.
Door pockets.
What are they called?
Door pockets.
Door pockets, yes. Yeah. The door pockets, were pretty useless. They're pretty shallow. But, you know, overall, I mean, the frunk is great. You could definitely fit some grocery bags in the front of the vehicle. And then in the back, they did show that they could fit two golf bags that were Corvette designed golf bags. So I don't know if you're going
to, and of course, being a Corvette, you know, it's got to be able to hold a couple of golf bags.
Exactly. Right. Like, I mean, I asked about shoe boxes and got nothing.
I hate the metric just because I've golfed very little and it hurt. But the the Corvette, like, the immediately it came out and it took this just shellacking for sort of the shape and the, you know, the squared off tail, which I honestly, I've seen it enough now. I don't think it looks bad. There's definitely, it's a modern design. So there's a lot of angles, a lot of strakes, a lot of lines. It's not quite as like sort of minimalist as some of the earlier Corvette designs, but it's in keeping with the times. It's a modern design. So I'll give that. Exactly. But also,
I mean, it's hard to take a bad picture of this thing. I got to tell you.
Yeah. And I've seen a number of these C8s now, you know, and I'm fine with the exterior design. I think it's a good looking car on the outside. Well,
and like when you think about the amount of practical considerations they took into account for this, like, and that's why I say, like, it's so comprehensively engineered for $60,000. You know, you can store the Targa top in the back, so it has, you know, built in storage for the roof panel. It can carry your groceries, so you could daily it. It's tame enough that you can drive it around. You know, like you were talking about the drive modes, you adjust it for comfort or you adjust it for, you know, a little bit more performance oriented driving. It's got so much capability. It's got a really wide range of talents. That's hard to do. Yes. And that's so impressive. Well, and it can go to 60 miles an hour in like less than three seconds. It's so fast.
Exactly. I mean, it's so fast. And the thing is that, you know, when I've driven like a Ferrari 458, when I've driven an Aston Martin, the NSX, you know, those vehicles, I especially felt like this in the Ferrari. It's amazing to drive. But would I want to take that every day? No. You know, it's a lot to drive. I found this Corvette, like, I would love to do a road trip in this thing. I would love it because you can adjust those things. So, like, I really didn't enjoy the steering in the touring mode. It was just too loose. It just wasn't engaging enough for me personally. The great thing is that you can fix that. You can adjust that. So if somebody else drives it that does like that type of steering, they can change that. And so there was just, you know, again, it's just that personalization and the breadth and depth of capabilities and variety of uses, you know, the track. I mean, we had those same vehicles then on the track the next day, and it was fantastic. I mean, it definitely made me a better driver. It was really comfortable. We did launch control, which was a lot of fun to do. And it just, you know, it was one of those vehicles that you just want to keep driving it. I wanted to keep driving it. I wanted to keep experiencing it.
Well, and so that's something that, you know, you mentioned it in passing, right? But you had the same vehicles from the road drive on the track for the second day. You know, and you're just one of, you know, however many waves of people.
Seven waves, about 100. Right. And I think they said there was going to be about 150 people. Yeah.
Was that at Las Vegas Motor Speedway?
No, it was at Spring Mountain.
Yes,
where they also offer a 2-day driving class for all purchasers. So if you buy a Corvette, you get a 2-day driving class.
And that's a nice track.
You know, it was really nice. I've spent some time on tracks, more than the average consumer, but less than a lot of other people in our industry. And I felt like I could adapt to that. You know, I was comfortable in it, but part of it, I was comfortable on the track. But part of it was I was so comfortable in the vehicle. Like I felt very secure and confident with that vehicle.
Yeah, I'm just,
you know. And I think one of the interesting things about Corvettes, especially the last couple of generations of them, is they've actually done a shockingly good job of packaging and practicality, you know, for the kind of car that this is. You know, I mean, especially from the C6 onward, you know, you had, you know, a pretty good sized trunk under that rear hatch, you know, when you're still front engine. And, you know, there was a lot of space in there to put stuff including that Targa top. And you still have that ability to put that Targa top in the trunk of this one and still have some storage room, you know, especially with the front.
Yep, exactly. No, we took the top off in the afternoon and we were able to store it again very easily. Now, I did not lift it. Henry did. So I don't know how heavy it is, which was, I should have done that. But it was very easy to get off and it slid in and secured, but there was still space on either side. But you're right, Sam, because in the front you can fit several pieces of luggage. And so there actually is a good amount of storage in a vehicle that, you know, of this size. And of course the engine takes up most of the back, as it should. So they just, there was
although it doesn't actually take up that much space, because one of the advantages to continuing to use GM's classic Chevy small block architecture is it's actually, you know, for what is a fairly large displacement engine at 6.2 liters, it's actually a really compact package. It's shockingly small and lightweight.
Yeah, but they did make the vehicle a little bit longer to accommodate that golf bag size, that golf bag metric. So it is a little bit longer, you know, but no, you're absolutely right. I feel like people that are going after clickbait are going to really, they're going to be very picky and find things that are really, they would probably let go in any other vehicle because this thing is really good. Right. There were a couple, 60 grand. I'm sorry.
60 grand and, exactly. And 150 of us idiots beat the hell out of however many for days and days and they didn't break. Like
there was a couple of material choices, particularly the switches, like the levers on the steering wheel and the stocks that were, I was a little bit annoyed because they should have been upgraded. They should be at least aluminum. And I told GM, I said, I think you should offer an interior appearance package, because that's kind of where you see some of those, a little bit of the cost, you know, they're constraining themselves, which is understandable. But so much of it is so good. Like that was really nitpicking, you know, like it's everything you end up touching in this vehicle feels really good. Even the $60,000 one, it doesn't have the leather dash. It doesn't have some of these other things, but it still has the top stitching. It still has really comfortable seats. It still does really well. They also do have three different kinds of seats that you can purchase as well. So again, you can customize this vehicle just in a fabulous fashion.
Yeah, they've learned all the good lessons from Porsche.
Take stuff out and then charge you to put it back.
you have a price that you advertise, and then you have, you know, all kinds of ways to personalize it that, you know, if you are injudicious with your use of the options list, you can end up spending a hell of a lot more.
The lovely thing
grand.
About the Corvette is of that with the C8, right, you can spend $60,000, which is like Boxster money, and get something that's going to run with a 911 very, very capably or faster.
Or faster.
Yeah. It's definitely going to. Yeah. It will have to run with one of those $100,000+ 911s, not sort of.
Well, the Porsche, the 911 starts at $94,000.
Gosh, it's been a while since I looked at the
price. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because somebody said, why not just buy a 911? I'm like, because it's $94,000.
Yeah. They're also like, they're different things. They're different things, and it's okay to have more than one choice. Like,
yes, exactly.
In fact, it's good to have multiple choices.
There's room in the market for multiple vehicles like this.
And, you know, even if you're just looking at, you know, high-end mid-engine sports cars. You know, you look at what's out there in the market today. You know, you've got the NSX, you've got, you know, the Ferrari, it's a F8 now. Is that what's out now? Yeah, the F8. You know, or the previous generations. You've got, you've got all the McLarens and the Lamborghinis and the Audi R8, and every one of these cars has a distinctly different character to it. And they're not all of them are going to appeal to everybody. You know, an R8, you know, feels like something very different from a Corvette. You know, just the way that engine sounds and, you know, the way it rumbles, you know, is entirely different. And an NSX is something else entirely different. The NSX is a wonderful car. I love the NSX, but it has a totally different kind of character to it than what you're going to get from something like this.
It does. And it also, the NSX doesn't have nearly the modern technology from an HMI standpoint. I mean, that the you know, the infotainment system on this was really good. As an example, we were driving in the middle of nowhere. I had no cell phone signal and I was able to tap into the Wi-Fi, you know, the hotspot that GM has in all their products. And it worked. And, you know, it was a good example of why, of where you're driving this fantastic, you know, awesome driving machine. And that also happens to have a hotspot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, and to Acura's credit, you know, they put all their technology exactly into that hybrid powertrain that's in there.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
It's got an infotainment system that's exactly the same one that's in our Civic.
Yeah.
But, you know, but no, much more sophisticated powertrain.
It does. It does. And you know, again, as you said, the NSX is fantastic, and it's a different driving experience.
It is.
All right. Well, that sounds like a ringing endorsement.
Well, it's good to hear that it turned out well. And I found a picture of on the media site of the phone mounted in there, and I dropped it in the Dropbox. You know, in this slot that is, as you said, you know, it's on the back wall between the two seats. So I imagine it's got to be really awkward to actually put your phone in there. You know, I guess unless you reach with your left arm across and
it is
slide it in there.
Well, and yeah. and that's I mean, when we think about the interior, it is very cozy for sure. Especially, yeah. I can't imagine
mid-engine cars are.
I'm sorry.
I said all mid-engine cars are. You know, cozy yes. in that way.
Yeah, this is definitely cozy. The other thing is that when we did take the Targa top off, there's no place for a windscreen. So it was, while we were able to carry on a conversation, it wasn't quiet by any means.
So is there a gap back there between the...
There is.
Isn't there, or is the... There's, you still have the rear window on there, right?
Right, you still have the rear window and there is a bit of a gap. There really is no place to put any kind of a buffer. You know, a buffering system. And speaking of Envy, they did a really nice job of, you know, the car. You definitely have some road noise that comes in from the Michelin tires, but nothing intrusive. You can hear the engine, but you almost, like, I almost wanted to hear it a little bit more. They almost overcorrected because you are in a sports car and I am a total exhaust note junkie, so I wouldn't have minded even a little bit more rumble than the vehicle.
Does this not have a dual mode exhaust that they've had on previous Vets?
I don't know.
I believe there is an active exhaust, but you know, I think most of what you hear in the cabin is actually intake noise. Because there was an Autoline, I think it was an Autoline After Hours with Tej Juchter, who was lead engineer on it. And
Tej Juchter.
Okay. You're better at it than I am. The problem they had was they have a very thick rear window and a very thick sort of rear bulkhead there, because what they needed to get out of the cabin was all of the accessory drive noise that's off the front of the engine. Like, you don't want to hear the alternator and the water pump. You want to hear the intake and the exhaust noise. And you're further from the exhaust now than you had been. You know, it all exits back way behind you. So they stopped a lot of noise coming through the firewall, and they allow you to hear some of the, because it breathes from the side vents there that are right outside the windows, you can still hear some of that. And I'm sure there's some coming over the audio system or something. I'd be surprised if there wasn't. But that's the balance they have to make, right? Is there's noise regulations. They wanted to sell this thing in global markets, so they have to make sure that it's quiet enough. Although GM may be not selling it in right-hand drive markets, even though they engineered it to be right-hand drive or left-hand drive. And so that'll be interesting to see if the Corvette is like the one exception, because GM decided to not do any more right-hand drive cars.
No, they are doing right-hand drive.
Well, I know
that only the Corvette. Only the Corvette.
Right, for the Corvette. Right, for the Corvette. Yeah, and I talked to them a little bit about that, because it requires them to parts of the interior that they were able to keep, but certainly that center console, they did need to have a new mold for that, for a right-hand drive. It's not an easy switchover, you know, because it is so cockpit centric, and there was some expense there that they had to do.
Yeah, but I think that's also a really smart play because the Corvette is popular like around the world, and to make it easier to acquire and to drive in those markets, I think it's smart. So it was worth it. There's a lot of engineering that you just don't see in this car. That
yes,
it's just so impressive, and I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to just sort of poke in and around it. Just again, it's the Corvette. The Corvette is always a fantastic bargain for what you get.
It so is. Well, I think they did a good job of honoring the legacy of this vehicle and really setting it up for future success. I think they did a nice, it's really, really good.
All right. Well, we'll have to get one and see if our opinions
match. Exactly. Soon.
Consumer Reports Top 10.
How many of these have we all had a chance to drive? I feel like I've had a solid time in most of them, a good number of them. Do you think that their recommendations are on or off? Like there's stuff that I just expected to see here, which I did. Like their number one compact is the Corolla. Like, okay, ho hum.
Yeah, I mean, I would take the Civic over the Corolla.
That's sort of like hard to. Yeah, I'm sure that they would shrug and be like, okay.
Yeah. I haven't driven either of the Subarus that they've got on the list here. I think another one I would take issue with is their choice of hybrid with the Prius. The Prius is very efficient. You know, it drives much better than the old one, but. Yeah, it's just kind of it's hard to look at, and in the same price range, I would probably take either the Kia Niro or the Hyundai Ioniq.
Okay, should we just give them does it give away the store if we tell people what all of the picks are? I mean, they put it out.
Sure, we're going to include the link in the show notes anyway. So
yeah, okay,
starting off, under $25,000, they picked the Corolla for a small car. Which, they said, I would probably go with the Civic. The new Corolla is very good. It's way better than any past Corolla. So,
I like their reasons for it. You know, how it comes with all the safety tech and stuff that's important to buyers, looking for value and safety, which is like, those are two very important things that are way more important to regular consumers than, how it handles or, turns and stuff. So,
no, absolutely. And then, moving on up to the small SUVs, they picked the Subaru Forester. I've not driven the new Forester yet, or latest generation Forester. Have you? You have, I think.
If I have, it's been a while, or a little bit. The most recent Subaru I had was the Legacy. But Subarus are so consistent, I know what I would get if I stepped into the Forester. I'm not sure I fully agree with that that pick. It's not a bad choice, but I don't know. There's so much choice in that field. I think you hardly can go wrong, but I really, really like the RAV4. The newest RAV4, I think, is just so well done. It has everything the Forester offers. In the Toyota way. So it's again, it's like, well, pick the color, pick the styling you like. It's hard to go wrong here. The Forester really does. I can see why it appeals to them. It's standard all wheel drive versus being an option on some of the others. It does have good visibility. It's got all of those Subaru traits that we like. But I think the RAV4 is, it's more pleasing to actually drive. And, I don't think it's any less of a value. It may actually be more. And tech in both sucks. So,
yeah, I mean, in the text, they also mentioned, the Honda CRV, and, I think I'd probably opt for the CRV.
I quite like the CRV too.
They're all very good choices.
Yeah.
Okay, so hybrid, they picked the Prius. I already mentioned, the Ioniq or the Niro. What about you?
I don't mind the Prius, but I'd actually lean towards, get the Camry hybrid or the Corolla hybrid.
Yeah.
And, I don't feel the need to jump into the Prius itself. It's just, it's a little funk box. I still don't like the way the they may have changed it now, but the one of the last Priuses I had, that center console, the trim was all white. It looked like a bidet.
Yeah, I think that's on the Prius Prime.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, on the plug-in hybrid. So midsize sedan.
Right, oh, the Legacy. Yeah, I like the Legacy. If you like Subarus, you'll like the Legacy too. It's kind of squishy in that Subaru way. Visibility is good. It's a good Legacy, but it's not a great midsize sedan, even with all-wheel drive. And now the competition has started nipping at its heels. You can get the Camry with all-wheel drive. You can get the Altima with all-wheel drive. And I think the all-wheel drive Camry, despite of, you know, its looks, which can be a bit much, I think the Subaru looks great. But I think the Camry is probably the better choice.
I would tend to agree with you there. Okay, large sedan, Toyota Avalon.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, the choices in this segment are shrinking. You know, a lot of what was there has gone away or is about to go away. I think of what's left, the Avalon is probably, I think Hyundai discontinued the Azera in North America, right?
If they haven't, they're close.
Kia just launched a refresh of the Cadenza, so there's the Cadenza. But yeah, I mean, you know, the Avalon's a great choice, you know, if this is what you're looking for.
I think so. The Cadenza may look a little sharper, may feel a little nicer inside. I think that was my impression of it the last time. I think the Avalon is actually the better car to own and drive. It's weird though, in large car or large sedan land, you've got a couple of different architectures to choose from, right? You could go with the Avalon, which is basically a bigger Camry. So it's front wheel drive and it's, you know, a pretty well-known quantity, but you could also go with something like a Chrysler 300, which beyond being old, which is fine. It's an older car. It doesn't drive poorly, but it's also a large sedan. So there's still some choice and it really comes down to what you want and expect out of your car. So that's a really kind of it's not a high volume segment, but that's a kind of a buyer specific segment. The Avalon's a great all arounder. Like it's going to please just about everybody. So,
And you know, if you want something, you know, in this size class, you know, with a little more sporting flavor to it, you know, you could always get the Charger with a Hellcat engine in it.
Yeah.
and there's a wide body Hellcat Charger now. So, you know, that's always an option for you.
Right. I would like to see an Avalon with 707 horsepower though.
that could be interesting.
Yeah.
You would definitely want the all-wheel drive with that, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, yeah. Definitely.
All right. Midsize three-row utility, Kia Telluride. I mean, you know, I think obviously a toss-up here between this and the Hyundai Palisade.
Everybody loves the Telluride.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. The Telluride is, I think, of the two, the Telluride's the better one between the Hyundai and the Kia. But I mean, what's the competition for midsize three-row SUVs? Like,
let's see. Like, you've got, you know, got the Highlander, the Honda Pilot, Ford Explorer.
So this is the issue with this class, right? The new Highlander is really pricey. It starts at like 35.
Yeah, I mean, and so, you know, same is true of the Explorer. You know, it starts in that same price range. You know, the prices on all these are, you know, keep climbing up every year as they add more stuff to them. The Kia and the Hyundai, you know, are, as usual, great value propositions. You know, I think a maxed out Telluride, you know, doesn't get you above like $46,000-$47,000.
Yeah. I mean, and that's really the winner. And it feels like $1 million inside. It looks so good. The interior, you took the badges off this thing and parked it next to an XC90. It would look right at home.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So,
all right. That compact impresses me. Pickup, Honda Ridgeline.
Yes, absolutely. 100% agree.
I think for the vast majority of people, yes, this is absolutely the best choice for them. You know, in terms of its cargo capacity, you know, its roominess, its driving dynamics, fuel efficiency, you know, I think it's a fantastic choice. If you need something that is more truck-like, you know, with if, you know, especially if you need, you know, any kind of towing capability, any more significant towing capability, you know, either the GM or Ford's, you know, I mean, the Tacoma, you know, is reliable, but not great to drive. But you know, the Ranger or the Chevy Colorado GMC Canyon, you know, are other alternatives if you're in that segment.
Yeah. Well, so remember the focus of Consumer Reports too. Cause you're going to, I think this is a mildly controversial pick, for some truck buyers who are looking for, trucky trucks. And that's not necessarily who reads Consumer Reports. So I think that this is perfect for the people they're talking to. And for most people, like, this would be the perfect truck for me.
If you need to haul home some, you know, 20 bags of topsoil for your garden or some, or, you know, 20 bags of mulch, you know, then this is a perfectly good truck, you know, and it's so good in so many ways.
Yeah. And it's comfortable. It's roomy. It's a good truck.
All right. Midsize SUV, Lexus RX.
No. No. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
I have no idea. There are so many good choices in this segment. The Ford Edge is really good. You know, if you want something more premium, you know, the Lincoln MKX is also in there. You know, the Acura RDX, I think, is a great option here. You know, there are so many choices here.
Yeah.
And the RX, you know, is fine, but
no, the RX is so old. It's ungainly. Yeah. It's no, this is not, don't, I get from the consumer perspective, Lexus dealers will treat you really well. The vehicle is going to be reliable and, it's not that expensive for what it is. It's just, it doesn't feel all that luxurious, and it's a Lexus, so it's supposed to be luxurious. It's, again, its infotainment is not good, and it sucks to drive.
That is true.
It's awful.
Yeah.
This is one of the few Toyota products that hasn't moved to the TNGA, right?
And you know, this generation of RX has been around for a while
ages.
Now. It's probably going to get a replacement, you know, within the next 12 months. So I would probably stay away from this particular choice.
For practical consumer, like car as dishwasher things, it'll be fine, but not, I can't get behind it.
Yeah. All right. Last one, sports car, Toyota Supra.
You know, a sports car is a really personal choice. I feel like people
and,
who
and
are
way
buying,
more subjective than any other segment,
yeah.
I think.
I feel like people who are buying sports cars are really particular. So it's hard to pick one sports car that's going to satisfy every kind of sports car buyer. I don't think the Supra is a bad choice, though. I know it's controversial. A lot of folks don't like the way it looks. I was astounded at how great it looked when I saw one for the first time in person. I like it a lot. I think in terms of how it drives, you know, the BMW bones help it out. So I don't think it's a terrible choice. I think that this one's going to spark more. Yeah. But what about, you know, ... conversations than anything else?
I think the reality is that anybody is looking for a sports car is probably not going to be looking to this list to help them make their decision.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, depending on what you want, you know, there's such a broad range, you know, of cars that fall into the category of sports car, you know, from the Miata to the Corvette, you know, to, you know, an NSX, you know, and everything in between. So I think that this particular category doesn't make sense on this particular list.
It's a really, I would say, and we can ask, I know, Keith Barry, he's another New England writer. So, and he writes for Consumer Reports. So I can ask him about sort of the difficulty of the choices here. This was probably the hardest category for them because it is, again, it's a little outside of their normal, sort of, I guess sort of like who you generalize as the Consumer Reports reader or, you know, audience member. And there's so much emotion wrapped up in sports cars. It's that's a hard thing to pick. The Super's a fun, it's going to be a fun car. You're going to find stuff to like about it, but it wouldn't be my first pick. But quite honestly, I can't tell you what my first pick would be, because I'd have to, like, this is one of those things where I'd need to, like, actually put them in sort of a list and just be like, well, what do I like about this one? What do I like about that one? And it depends on what you're using it for, too. So the best thing is to get a lot of sports cars for different reasons.
That's right. But
You know what? We skipped the EV. They had the Tesla Model 3 as the EV. What do you think about that? But I mean, you know, you have more experience with Teslas with Teslas and EVs than I do. Like I have been watching the Tesla Model 3, like, it's gotten a lot of accolades, and the owners love them. But also the media, those of us who look at this stuff critically, also are very impressed by that car. So
yeah, I mean, it does a lot of things really well. And if you're in the market, for something in the $40,000 to $50,000 price range, or $40,000 to $60,000 price range in an EV, it's a really good choice. It depends a lot. Like sports cars, I think, this is a category now where you're picking it by powertrain, and there's going to be an increasing number of choices over the next year or two that are radically different cars. And even what's available today among EVs are radically different, from the Nissan Leaf, up through, Model X, and all kinds of stuff in between. Later this fall, we've got the Mustang Mach-E coming. You've got the Hyundai Kona EV that's already out there, the Chevy Bolt. So I think it depends a lot on what you want from a car, from a vehicle. You kind of have to, make all the same kinds of decisions, like which of these other categories. I mean, this could fit into any of the other categories above, cars versus utilities and wagons. So we're going to see a lot of different options, and there's already a lot of widely disparate options now, just like with sports cars.
Yeah. I mean, without having the opportunity to be in as many EVs and stuff, like I have more faith in this stuff from Audi and other automakers that's sort of not quite here yet. And I know range.
I mean, stuff that's here now, I would probably be more inclined to buy, a Kia Niro or a Chevy Bolt than I would to buy a Model 3.
I've been looking at Bolts on like Car Gurus and Carvana and stuff. You need a lot of car, a lot of EV for your dollar there.
Oh, yeah. They're
well under $20,000 for a used one.
That's one of the challenges with EVs too, is the depreciation tends to be really high. So you can actually get some screaming deals on used EVs. So if you want to buy an EV, I would seriously look at a 2 to 3 year old, Bolt or a Leaf or even a Tesla rather than a brand new one.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody's concern is the battery life, and the battery life is simply not an issue.
It's not.
In any of them. Like, yep. The battery's going to outlast other stuff.
All right. So with that, let's wind it up. Thank everybody for the good reviews on Apple Podcasts, and keep them coming if you can. It helps us to get up onto their top lists and hopefully help more people find the show. And let your friend, if you like the show, let your friends know about it, and tell them to come and listen.
Yeah, and Sam, you're gonna make appearances in other places. I think everybody should look for you. I know you're going on Tech Guy shortly, and like you are around. You're the figurehead of Wheel Bearings.
I'm somewhat prolific.
So good. All roads lead back to us, though. So that's good. So anyway, thanks for listening. We'll catch everybody next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Wheel Bearings. Find us at wheelbearings.media and on Twitter as @wheelbearingscast. Remember, there's only one vowel, that's the A in cast, We're also at Car Review Tweets on Twitter, or you could just email us. That's feedback@wheelbearings.media.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.